What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 52, and today we're going to be talking about the bad side of sunscreen and some of the reasons why you might want to hesitate putting it on the next time you go out on these long day trips, hiking, swimming, stuff like that. There's a little more nuance to the whole situation. It's not just a blanket good thing. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how you been?
I've been great lately, but I got two things to talk about today, so I'm going to try and make them both a little short.
Okay.
So I met this woman. Her name's Trina. Shout out to Trina if she's listening. Hopefully she is. So I just met her the other day. Unfortunately, she has kidney failure or kidney disease, and she has cancer, pancreatic cancer, to be more specific.
That's a shitty cancer to have.
Yeah, it really is, and that's a really bad combo. So I talked to her for about 15 minutes, tried to give her the whole metabolic theory of cancer, just talk like as fast as I possibly could. Everything I told her, she was just like, I've never heard any of this before, and this makes so much more sense than anything I've ever heard in my life. Like from everybody that's been, like she's been talking to. I just kind of just told her, I was like, well, look, I'm pretty sure your doctors have told you that you just got dealt like a bad, shitty hand of cards. And I was like, no, that's not the case. It's most likely a lifestyle factor. And just kind of told her cancer is caused by damaged mitochondria that have a messed up energy pathway. And the reason that most cancer patients have very low energy is like the miles per gallon in their car went from 40 down to 2. And she's like, that explains why I have no energy. She's like, it also makes sense because like her boyfriend also has cancer. They both developed cancer within a year of each other.
Jeez.
And I was like, well, do you both have the same genetics? She's like, no. I was like, well, are you both living the same lifestyle? She's like, yes. So, I mean,
that's a great point.
Yeah. So she's like, well, that makes a lot more sense. So I sent her, Tripping Over the Truth, sent her a podcast interview with, Dr. Tom, or I guess he's a professor. I don't think he's a doctor. Professor Thomas Seyfried?
Yeah, I think he's a professor, yeah.
Yeah, he's a researcher. He's the OG when it comes to this whole cancer topic. He came at it from a genetic point of view and was trying to find a solution to cancer through genetics. And he came across that, oh, hey, this other theory makes so much more sense. So if he can be swayed, anybody should be able to be swayed.
Yes.
So sent her an interview with him. Sent her a study that was his work, Dominic D'Agostino, and I know there's a couple other names, but I don't really remember, but it's their whole...
Their like, gang?
Yeah, it's their whole cancer-like protocol, the ketogenic diet mixed with hyperbaric oxygen. Just kind of, like, told her all that stuff as fast as I could, but then, like, was also, like, listening to her talk. Like, it was kind of hard to do, but
yeah.
Just kind of gave her as much information as I possibly could. I'm like, she seemed really receptive to it, so I wish her all the best.
Hopefully. How old is she?
You know, it's hard to tell. I didn't ask.
I mean, she's 20?
I don't think so. I hope she wasn't 20 because she did not look 20.
Okay, so maybe a little older.
Yeah, but I mean, okay. Like, I just laid out what issue she's dealing with. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure she looks a little bit older than what she actually is.
Got it.
So, yeah, that's normally not a question I'm going to ask.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just hoping all the best for her and that, you know, that journey. I mean, that's a really tough battle, especially when you got to deal with two battles at the same time.
Yeah, no, seriously. Actually, I just posted something, like a quick Instagram story. There was this post about, just about cancer in general, and I said how it's sad that I know more about cancer than most oncologists. That is so sad. I shouldn't. I'm a dude who talks on the internet, who like reads books for fun. I should not know more about cancer than them.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. Like, I don't think it's, oncologists, like, I don't think they're intentionally giving bad information. It's just that they spent years learning the wrong information. So they're experts in the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
It's very unfortunate. I'm sure they need so much more evidence than anybody else to make them think that the hundreds of thousands of dollars they spent and the hours upon hours of time spent, like, to make them change their minds.
Yeah, it was really hard memorizing, like, genetic pathways. And I bet it was really hard memorizing how these drugs interact with each other. And oh, like, yeah. Hey, sorry, bro, all that's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, that has to suck.
Yeah, I know. So, especially when your whole life has been, like, built on that.
Yeah.
Like, you have a bunch of other, you have to overcome your own pride and stuff to overcome that.
Just think, like, when you become a doctor, your whole name changes. You're not just Tom now. Now you're Dr. Tom.
Yeah, you put that white coat on, and now you are the expert.
Yeah.
People come to you for answers. You no longer need to go to other people for answers.
So it's real hard to have them change, but it's so sad, because I see it all the time. People get just the worst advice with cancer, saying, you know, oh, sorry, you know, to keep doing what you're doing, hopefully it changes. That is the worst advice you can give somebody.
Well, and what's funny is when I told her about the, like, metabolic theory and, like, the whole ketogenic diet and why that's effective, she's like, oh, yeah, because cancer gets fed by sugar. She knows that sugar is bad, but they, like, she never made the jump to, I need to go on a ketogenic diet, or nobody told her to go on, like, that low-carb diet. It's like, well, okay, so if everybody knows that sugar feeds cancer, isn't it logical to cut off its fuel?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why that's so hard to, like, but hopefully it will be.
Hopefully, no, I'm glad you were there to hopefully give her the nudge in the right direction.
Yeah, I gave her a bunch of information. I was like, if any of this is, you know, too, like, over your head, like, feel free to reach out. Mm-hmm. We exchanged numbers, so, I mean, hopefully this helps her out.
That's cool. Yeah. No, it's really good of you. That's nice.
Yeah. So, on another note, completely, like, a 180 for this, I know we're near as important.
Yeah.
So, on the road trip back from L.A. that I went on about a week and a half ago, I bought some pork rinds, and, like, that was just, like, my on-the-road snack. Pork rinds are they're not the best food, not the best snack, but if you're in a gas station, it's probably one of the better options.
For sure.
Yeah, I just needed something. So, got to think of pork rinds, and on the, like, the nutritional label, it says, not a significant source of protein.
Like, it boldly says that.
Yeah. So, like, it says, like, 5 grams of protein per serving and not a significant source of protein. So, I told you that. And, well, you had a good answer to it.
Did I?
Do you remember what it was?
I forgot what I said, no.
Okay, well, it's like, well, yeah, that's right, because collagen isn't a complete protein.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay.
It's,
like,
true.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that is true. But my rebuttal to that was, neither is celery or peanut butter, but those don't have it on the label.
Yes.
So what's going on with that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's just another instance where the animal-based product gets, like, some sort of ding against it, but the plant-based product doesn't.
Yeah, like, I don't have a problem with that being on the label. I kind of like that being on that label.
So do I.
But that should be on pretty much everything that isn't meat.
Yes. Meat, dairy, eggs, any sort of animal-based product is going to have a complete amino acid profile and therefore be a quality source of protein. But when you get a can of beans and it says maybe, I don't know, 12 grams of protein per serving, right next to it, it should have not a significant source of protein.
Yeah, like, I've never seen that on a label before, and it upset me, because I was like, this is so deceiving.
Yes, it is.
The only thing I could, like, the only places maybe that it shouldn't be is if you're buying something that's balanced out, because I know, like, rice and beans are, like, a decent combination, because what the beans are lacking in amino acids, the rice kind of makes up for it, but you're still not getting, it's not a great source of protein. It's just, it's finally forming a complete source of protein.
Yep.
But, like, I don't really know if you combine those combined. I guess maybe in a bean and cheese burrito or something, like,
maybe
something like that. But, yeah, that's the only time where you're actually going to get, like, a complete protein from plant sources.
And just think how many people already think pork rinds are just inherently unhealthy.
Yeah.
They do.
Unfortunately, it doesn't say what oil that they're fried in.
Mm.
I'm assuming it's something bad.
I think some of them are fried in their own oils.
Maybe. I mean, maybe that's why they're not.
Hope so.
That's what I'm hoping too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I only eat them if I'm on, like, a road trip and I need something to snack on.
Yeah. But, I mean, people look at pork rinds like they're healthy. Then they flip over the label and they see this weird, like, writing saying not a significant source of protein. They're like, oh, this is already bad and the protein sucks. Like, it's like a double ding.
Yeah, no, that's just, it's such a shame. Like, I mean, but the vegans are taking over.
I know it sucks. I mean, honestly, that kind of ties into what I wanted to talk about a little bit from what's new with me. I wanted to touch on last week's podcast. We talked about salt, and we talked about this a little bit, like who benefits from this low salt narrative, because it's not the like fast food companies, it's not the processed food companies, because all those foods are going to be high in salt. But what it does paint picture is vegetables and grains are naturally low in salt, especially compared to meat, because meat's going to be high in salt. So it's just another way to kind of say vegetables are good because they're low in salt. Meat is bad because they're high in salt. So once again, it's a way to kind of paint meat in a bad light.
Yeah, if you want to lower your salt, remove meat and replace it with vegetables.
And that sucks.
Yeah, I know. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I had... we've talked about this off air a few times, that I really want to do rebuttal to the vegan movies What the Health and Fork Over Knives. And you've kind of been kind of so-so on it, just because they are, I mean, they're old-ass movies. When they come out?
What the Health came out, I think, like 3 years ago now. Forks Over Knives is older than that. I don't know, probably at least 5 years ago.
Yeah, so they're not the newest movies, but I've had so many people recently bring these movies up to me as kind of like big, like, counterpoints. I'm like, oh, what do you eat? It's like, oh, I'm pretty much a zero-carb guy. I eat a bunch of meat. I drink a little bit of milk. Now it's about it. And they go, oh, I saw this documentary called Forks Over Knives. You're not supposed to eat that. Like, I don't know how many people in the last 3 weeks have thrown that at me. Like, that's their Hail Mary.
Well, it's so funny is, because I've the people or the documentary that most people bring up to me is What the Hell? And I always laugh in their face when they bring that up. I was like, that is the worst documentary I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because I haven't heard one positive review on it. And I've heard a ton of, like, negative reviews. And I don't only follow ketogenic people, and I don't only follow, like, carnivores. I try to follow a wide variety of different people from different points of views, because everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses. And pretty much everybody agreed that that was a horrible video.
It is a horrible video.
Yeah. So, I mean...
And I hate calling it a documentary.
Yeah.
Because it's not. It's honestly, it's a hit film. Like, it's honestly vegan propaganda. They both are. Designed to scare people away from meat. And this one lady, she was like, you know, if you can convince me that bacon's healthy, I would love you. Because, like, people naturally, like, what am I supposed to eat? I'm telling her, go have a steak. And she's like, I just watched this documentary, in air quotes, saying that steak will kill me. Like, people are just confused what they can eat.
Yeah, and I think what really the problem is with the media, is the media just wants to get your attention over a catchy headline. Like, keto is going to save your life. Then the next day, keto is going to give you keto crotch, or it's going to give you heart disease.
Yeah, bacon like that. Gives you cancer.
Yeah, they always want just like the clickbait, but they're never really like examining like the studies that they're using, which they should be doing. They're journalists. They should be able to like pick apart these studies, at least a decent amount. Especially like, so Gary Taubes, he's not a scientist. He's a science journalist. And he got his, that's why he started writing all his books, is because he was the actual journalist looking into the science behind it. And it's like, oh, that's where this shitty, like...
This conclusion was made from this shitty study?
This dietary recommendation came from this survey? This is ridiculous. Like, he's an actual journalist that actually looked into those steps. So thank God he's around to do that.
Thank God.
And has wrote so many books about that.
Yeah, no, Gary Taubes is the man. And actually, that's a good transition. If you are out there and you're looking for a documentary, and I will say a documentary for this movie to watch, there's a new one that just came out, and it's called Fat, a Documentary. By the way, I hate that title. By the way, there had to have been a catchier title than that, but there's not.
A Fat Documentary sounds better.
Yeah, this is just Fat, a Documentary. But Gary Taubes is in it. Dave Feldman is in it. He's like the master cholesterol guy. He knows way more about cholesterol than damn near anyone. And Nina Teicholz is in it, and she's great. Her book is, what's her book's called? I forget now.
Is that Deep Nutrition?
No, that's a Laker lady.
Oh, that's Kate Shanahan?
Is it? Fuck, I forgot her name. I know she just works for the Lakers. I forget her book now, but Nina Teicholz, she's super smart, super educated, and honestly, I trust all those people's opinions. So if you want to watch a good documentary, go check that out. You can find it on iTunes, I know. I'm not quite sure wherever else you can find it, but if you just go online, you'll find it somewhere.
It's on Amazon as well.
Is it on Amazon?
Yeah. Okay, it's Amazon. On all the, like, the popular video places. Okay. I mean, it's not... Maybe it's free if you have Amazon Prime, but I'm going to have to pay for it, but it seems like it's worth it. It's only a couple bucks.
Yeah, I'm totally going to pay for it too, honestly, just to support them. But we are going to do a like kind of review of that movie, and I think we'll probably do that next week.
Yeah, I'd rather watch that one than have to watch the other two shitty documentaries.
Oh yeah, those movies suck. But we are going to do a rebuttal of Forks Over Knives and What the Health. We're just going to do it all in one big podcast. And honestly, if you get me rambling about vegans, I think I can talk about it for hours. So I might cut it up into two podcasts. But we're going to do rebuttal on those. We're going to talk about all the nutritional deficiencies of the vegan diet. I mean, shit, I might even go into the ethical deficiencies of the vegan diet and the environmental deficiencies of the vegan diet. Because every pillar that diet stands on is shaky at best. And at worst, it's just completely wrong. So we'll do that. Honestly, I think that's going to be the next two podcasts. That's probably what we'll do.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to know what we're talking about, check out that fat documentary. And if you want to watch those two other videos, feel free to. But I mean, I don't really recommend it.
Definitely not.
You're not going to learn anything.
You won't. Just a bunch of misinformation. That's all it is. And a bunch of the scare tactics to, honestly, to get you to eat shitty food and to lower your overall health. Yeah, but let's get into today's topic. Not the smoother transition, that's for sure. But we are going to talk about sunscreen. And we're both a couple white boys. I think I'm the whitest guy you ever seen in your life. You know, red hair, blue eyes. But sunscreen, we both have experience with sunburns in our life.
So pretty funny. When did you go hiking in Marin? Was that like 6 months ago?
You mean like the Redwood Forest?
Yeah.
Yeah, like 6 months ago. Okay. Yeah,
So you got tan there. That was the darkest I've ever seen you. And you're still the whitest person I've ever met in my
exactly,
life.
Exactly. 100%.
So like when we're talking like we're white people, like we're really, really white.
The whitest.
So I just want to talk about some like just funny sunburn stories. The worst sunburn I've ever had was on the top of my feet. And it happened right before, I think it was like freshman year of high school. So, you know, wearing those brand new shoes, they're all like extra tight and everything.
Nice and stiff.
Yeah, so like that hurts so bad. And I remember getting home, because you know like when you have a sunburn, like it kind of, like there's like fluid to it. I don't really know what's coming out of your skin, but it's kind of wet. Like I had to peel my socks off. It was so disgusting and it hurt so bad. And my feet are just itching. And I can't do anything about it, like, all day. I had to deal with that for the first week.
Yeah.
I think that was, like, the worst sunburn, like, that I've had.
Ever. That's a horrible location.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like, 5-degree burns or anything. It was just, like, so annoying, and there's just nothing I could do about it. It was just constantly being reminded of it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm so white. My mom has put, like, the fear of God for the sun in my, like, head since I was, like, born. You know, she's always... I mean, I probably put more sunscreen on than anyone I've ever known for the first maybe 20 years of my life. Like, I was always wearing sunscreen every day. But when I was 8 years old, I went to this, like, pool party, and I got second-degree burns all across, like, my shoulders and upper back. And I'm talking, like, blisters. I'm talking, it looked like someone dropped, like, acid on my back. You know what I mean? And
like
that sucked.
Like, you had a kitchen accident, basically?
Pretty much. Yeah. Exactly. It looked really bad. And, so I definitely know a thing or two about sunburns, and I know how much they suck, and I know they're damaging to your body. Like, you should try and avoid sunburns as best you can. But that's not to say the sun is inherently bad.
No, there's actually a lot of benefits to the sun, and the sun's been around way longer than humans have existed on this planet. Humans have been around for at least 2.5 million years as our current, like, form of humans.
Close enough, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, we've evolved in sunlight, and I think we're exposed to less sunlight now than we ever have been. Right now, we're indoors, and the sun's out.
Exactly. Like,
our ancestors weren't experiencing that.
No, ever.
So let's just talk about some of the benefits of sunlight. So for one, like, improved mental health. I'm pretty sure most people have heard this. Like, the city of Seattle deals with a lot of suicides and a lot of depression because they have a lot of rain and it's overcasted, so they don't get a lot of sunlight exposure. So sunlight triggers our bodies to release serotonin. Serotonin is like a feel-good hormone. So if you're not getting that sunlight exposure, you're highly likely to be more depressed than somebody that is. So one great way to treat depression is just to get out in the sun and let your nature take care of its course. That's free, by the way. You don't need to go take some drug.
Exactly. Just go for a walk, man. 20 minutes and you'll feel way better.
Oh, I do that every day, or at least try to. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Another thing that... is another benefit of sunlight is improved sleep. So that serotonin release early in the day is great because serotonin gets turn into melatonin later on. Melatonin not only helps us fall asleep, but it helps us get into deep sleep. So we're getting higher quality of sleep and better and higher quantity of sleep as well. And if you're traveling and you're like changing time zones, it's a great way to help deal with jet lag. So another benefit of sun exposure is our bodies produce more cortisol. I know everybody hears the word cortisol and they think stress hormone and they think that it's bad. Well, cortisol is actually a good thing. It helps us wake up in the morning, and we want our cortisol levels to be higher during the day. We want to be alert during the day. And if our cortisol levels are high during the day, they'll decrease by nighttime and help us fall asleep. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So that's another way that sunlight exposure helps us with sleep.
That's actually one of the reasons I really like working out in the morning and taking caffeine in the morning, because caffeine will induce more cortisol release in your body. So I kind of double dip my cortisol hit in the morning. I kind of ride that cortisol wave when I wake up.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. And then with that, if you are one of those people that checks your ketones, checking first thing in the morning is a bad idea, because you do get that cortisol spike. Because guess what? Waking up is more stressful than being asleep. So that's called the dawn effect. So if you do check your ketone levels right when you wake up, you're going to get a very low reading. It's not because your body's not producing ketones. It's just because your cortisol levels are high. That means your blood sugar is going to be a little elevated.
Because sugar is a quick fuel, and in stressful situations, you're going to want some quick fuel.
Yeah, exactly. So another benefit is going to be improved bone health. So the ultraviolet B rays, we'll talk more about that a little bit later on. Sure. So the UVB rays from the sun, they trigger our bodies to synthesize vitamin D. So low vitamin D levels are linked to rickets and osteoporosis, two diseases that you don't want to have.
No. Go Google rickets. It's not a good look.
Yeah, and unfortunately, vitamin D is not very abundant in many foods. You can get some from seafood, like fish. You can get some from egg yolks and some from mushrooms, but mushrooms aren't really the best source. Sunlight is our best option. So whenever you can get sunlight for just for the vitamin D. So mushrooms contain D2, and animal sources contain D3. So D3 is the form that our body uses. D2 can be converted to D3. But there's really not a lot of studies on that showing like how effective it is. So just be safe and get your D3 from animal sources. And better yet, get it from the sun.
Yeah, that really is the one vitamin that no matter what you're eating, it's going to be low in foods. It just is. I mean, it's high in lard, like specifically pig fat. Because pigs, just like us, synthesize vitamin D in their sun. I mean, from the sun in their skin. But no one's out there eating a tub of lard a day. You know what I mean? It's just, you're not going to get that much.
So like 100 grams of those, of the foods that I just listed, they contain at best like 650 IUs or 850 IUs, somewhere around there. It's not a lot. So this is how much vitamin D your body can produce after 30 minutes in a swimsuit. So if you're Caucasian, some white boys like me and Tyson, mm-hmm. 30 minutes in the sun, you'll produce 50,000 IU.
A ton.
So if you're tan, darker, you know, like a brown color, 20,000 to 30,000 IU. And if you're dark skinned, we're talking 8,000 to 10,000 IU. And there's an evolutionary reason behind that. White people lived up north where they got less sunlight exposure. So they needed to be able to produce more.
We had to take advantage of the little sun we were exposed to.
Yeah, exactly. And then dark skinned people generally live right along the equator where there's a lot more sunlight. So they need that extra melanin to protect them from the harmful effects of the sunlight. So that's why there's different races right there.
Yep.
And another thing that there's more emerging science on, especially from like the red light therapy movement, like products like the Juve, or improved skin health. That helps with acne, eczema, psoriasis, scars, and just wounds in general. I've noticed this particularly by myself. Is like if I have some like acne, like I'm really active, so I do get a little bit of acne on my back and shoulders. If I go out in the sun, that shit goes away.
Yeah.
It's way better than any acne cream or anything else like that.
For sure. Yeah, that red light therapy, that's kind of, I'm interested in that. And like, I'm sure Ben Greenfield does stuff like that.
Oh, of course.
Of course, right?
He does it in some really weird ways too.
Does he? Okay. Yeah, that's like a guy, he's like a big, like a biohacker guy. So it's out there. I know Sean Baker has like a red light in his house, I think.
It seems like most people in this, like, better living through science world do have something like that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, like, they are kind of expensive. So that's the only reason I don't have one.
And they look like big rigs. Like, it's not like a light bulb. It's like a rack of lights.
I know one company makes it. I'm not sure what company it is, but you can buy, like, a little piece. And then you can buy, like, another piece and connect it. So you can, like, keep adding on and on, like, building, like, a Lego blocks.
Oh, okay.
So, like, if you don't want to spend, you know, a few hundred thousand or a few hundred dollars or $1,000, like, in one shot, you can just buy them, like, piece by piece.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So that's one way to kind of go around it. I forgot what company it is. They're not a sponsor, so I don't need to know.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, all right. Well, now we're going to go. That was the benefits of the sun. Like, the sun is not our enemy. The sun is a good guy. Our body's been around and exposed to it our entire existence, literally. So, of course, we've used the information the sun gives us to produce helpful things. Like we said, serotonin, vitamin D, things like that. But sunscreen is new. Sunscreen is full of a ton of shit that our body doesn't know what to do with. And we're going to go into some of the toxic effects of the chemicals in sunscreen coming up. But first, let's have a quick ad promoting our meal plans and coaching from me. TNT, wellnessandnutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Back to today's topic. So the big paper I read in prep for this podcast was titled "The Neurotoxic Effect of Active Ingredients in Sunscreen Products." And honestly, it was a super in-depth paper. I'll link it. It's on the website if you want to check it out. But it just went through all the popular ingredients in sunscreen and what they do to our bodies. And it was eye-opener, really. Coming from a guy who used to wear sunscreen damn near every day, I don't know, man, it made me just cross my fingers that I didn't get any sort of permanent damage done. But just first, to go into a different type of radiation that comes from the sun. So there are several types of electromagnetic radiation emitting from the sun. So one type is ultraviolet radiation, so that UV radiation everyone's heard of. And this is composed of three wavelengths. You have UVA, which is in the range of 320 to 400 nanometers, and is not absorbed by the ozone at all. You have UVB, which is in the range of 290 to 320, and that is partially absorbed by the ozone layer. And then you have UVC, which is completely stopped by the ozone layer. So we don't have to worry about UVC. So the UV radiation we do need to worry about is UVA and UVB, because those do get through the ozone and those do hit our skin and can adversely affect our skin. So the primary damage done by UV radiation is that radiation leads to reactive oxygen species generation, and that damages the DNA, protein, and lipids in our skin. And that really causes the damage from a sunburn. Those reactive oxygen species create something called lipid radicals from lipid peroxidation. And we talked about this a little bit in the Healthy Fat podcast. And this is why it's important to have the bulk of your dietary fat be saturated fat, because chemically they are very stable and they resist oxidation. If your diet is high in polyunsaturated fats, something like omega-6 fats, think of canola oil, corn oil, soy oil, those fats are very high in omega-6 fats, they oxidize very easily, and that in turn will make you sunburn very quickly. And that's the reason you just said I went to Muir Woods, 6 months ago, and I'm the whitest dude you ever seen in your life, and I was outside for maybe, 4 or 5 hours, no sunscreen at all, and I did not get sunburned. Like, being sunburned today, I don't know what I'd have to do to get sunburned today. I'd have to be in the sun for hours.
So talking about your story earlier about your day at the pool, if this was 10 years ago, you probably would have the same similar reaction. Like, not just a typical sunburn, like medical emergency type sunburn.
100%. I would have been out of the count for weeks. I probably wouldn't be able to go to work, wouldn't be able to wear a t-shirt, nothing for a long time, because my skin is so damn white that I just soak up all this radiation and my skin is just super sensitive.
Yeah, so I think it's twofold why you're so much more resilient is dealing with all those reactive oxygen species. You're giving your body everything it needs to make tons of glutathione to deal with that. And then also, the cell membranes, instead of being composed of these highly unstable polyunsaturated fats. Now they're made up of much more stable, stronger saturated fats.
Exactly.
So you're less prone to oxidation, and now you have more tools available to deal with that oxidation.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Yeah, the ketogenic diet and just being on running on fat upregulates our body's own natural defense system. Like that glutathione Tom talked about, that master antioxidant, you create more of that when you're on a ketogenic diet. So my body resists oxidation better, and it also deals with oxidation better when it does occur. So that's a great point. It's twofold. To go into like what's the big deal with oxidation, like it's something I talk about a lot. And so these reactive oxygen species, you can just think of them as free radicals. And people have heard that term before. If you think of, everyone's heard of antioxidants, like, you know, antioxidants are the shit. They do a million different things. What they fight against is free radicals. So exactly what oxidation means is actually means a loss of an electron. And any like OCHEM nerds out there, you'll know the, I don't know what it is it a moniker? Leo the Lion Goes Gur. What's that called?
Acronym?
Acronym, or yeah, moniker? Sorry.
I don't know, one or the other.
So Leo the Lion Goes Gur. So a loss of an electron is oxidation. A gain of an electron is reduction. So it's kind of backwards thinking, but that's just because an electron has a negative charge. But just put that in there for my science geeks out there.
I was unfamiliar with that. I've never heard that before.
Oh, really? Yeah, welcome to my life. Bio major, baby. But so an oxidized cell can become damaged and no longer function properly, leading to cell death. And that's a problem. So this process is called lipid peroxidation, and it has three steps, which include initiation, propagation, and termination. So in the initiation step, a free radical, or just a reactive oxygen species, comes along and steals a hydrogen from a double bond location in some cell membrane, because that's a point of weakness. And this creates an unstable lipid radical. Then the second step, propagation, occurs. Since this lipid radical is chemically unstable, it reacts quickly with any surrounding oxygen to create another radical called a lipid peroxyl radical. This unstable fat then reacts with another healthy free fatty acid in the cell, turning that healthy fat into yet another unstable lipid radical. This causes a cascade of radicals to occur. So pretty much just think one fat goes bad, and then it affects the fat next to it, it affects the cell next to it, it affects the fat next to it, it just keeps going and keeps going. The final stage, termination, only occurs when two radical lipids interact with each other, resulting in a normal functioning healthy fatty acid. Think of it in terms of like basic math. In this case, negative number would be a radical damaged fat, and a healthy fat would be a positive number. So when you have a negative number and it's multiplied by a positive number, the resulting answer is always negative. But when you have two negatives and they're multiplied together, they make a positive. So this propagation only ends when two free radicals and lipid radicals interact with each other, resulting in a healthy fat. But this only occurs once the radical versions of the fatty acids take up a considerable amount of the total percentage of fatty acids in that particular cellular membrane. So propagation isn't stopped until a lot of damage is already done. And that's because if you remember on our Healthy Fat podcast, 50% of our cellular membrane is fat. Most of our cellular membrane is fat. Like that's just a major thing. And the rest of it is cholesterol. Some of the byproducts from this lipid radical like propagation are usually various aldehydes. And that probably doesn't mean anything to anybody, honestly. But you've heard of aldehydes before. So think of formaldehyde. You've heard of formaldehyde, right?
Yeah, they use that in, like, mortuaries.
Yeah, to preserve, like, body parts and dead bodies. That's what they use, right? So that is a byproduct of this lipid propagation. That occurs in our body. That's something our body has to mop up. It has to deal with that damage. And also another one is acrolein, and that's a toxin found in cigarette smoke. We talked about acrolein in the Industrial Seed Oil podcast, so if you want to learn more about that, check that out. But acrolein is a biocide, meaning it's toxic to all life. That means it doesn't give a shit what cell you are, what species you are, anything. It just kills shit. And so all this shit is going on in our body, and that results in damage from sunscreen. Damage from UV radiation.
So I just want to back things up a little bit. So you said that first step, initiation.
Yeah.
So that occurs where there's a double bond.
Yeah.
So if your cell membrane is made up of saturated fats, what saturated means is that there are no double bonds. Saturated all has single bonds.
And single bonds are very strong.
Yes. So like that's why you're less prone to sunburns, is if you have a high saturated fat diet, low polyunsaturated fat diet.
Exactly. So this UV light is coming in, and it is creating these reactive oxygen species, but these reactive oxygen species are hanging around. They don't have any electrons to steal. So our body, the glutathione, and our natural defense systems can mop them up before they're able to initiate that propagation step and kind of just wreck shop.
Yeah, it's looking to damage the weakest link, but if your cells are saturated...
and strong as shit.
There are no weak links.
Exactly. Yeah. Just yet another benefit of saturated fat. So people kind of... I don't think people really understand the way sunscreen works, like what products are in sunscreen and what's really going on. So sunscreen works really in two ways. You have organic filters and inorganic filters. So an example of an organic filter would be something like, these are going to be real long, shitty names, and I'm not going to pronounce them right. But acetonoxate? Pronounce that.
I would say octinoxate.
That's way better.
Octinoxate.
Probably. Octinoxate, yeah. Yes. Or I'm going to just say OMC from here on out. And oxybenzone, that's an easy one. That's BP3. And these absorb light in the UV range. Then you have inorganic filters, such as zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. And these kind of sit on the surface of our skin, and they scatter and reflect the UV rays. So sunscreens are usually labeled as broad spectrum, meaning they contain both types of protection and cover both UVA and UVB. So the problem with organic filters, and the big one I'm going to talk about is BP3 or oxybenzone, because that's the primary one used in like most sunscreens. And I found out the sunscreen I have in my house, not that I use it anymore, but I just happened to look at it and I picked up what's the main ingredient. And the main ingredient in the sunscreen I have is oxybenzone. So it's super prevalent. But these chemicals get into our body through our skin. And they get through our skin super easy. People don't consider our skin like an organ, but it is. And it's like a sponge. Remember your magnesium experiment?
Oh, yeah. Well, like, what do you think is happening when you're rubbing sunscreen into your body? Like, it doesn't just stay white. It disappears. Where do you think it's going?
It's going in your body. Exactly, yeah. Right? So these chemicals get in our body through our skin. And in one study, 2,500 urine samples from the United States were analyzed for the presence of BP3, and BP3 was detected in 97% of the samples with a mean concentration of 22 nanograms. 97% of the samples. That's fucking all the samples. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that 3%, is that just statistical error?
Yeah, maybe.
Or like those people weren't exposed to enough of it. Like maybe they just those are like the three people that had the genetic lottery,
yeah,
I guess.
Or never wore sunscreen ever. Yeah. Yeah, so these experimental studies confirm substantial absorption and distribution of organic filters, whereas inorganic filters like the zinc and titanium seem to penetrate the human skin to a very minimal degree. And it's kind of a scary thing. These filters, these organic filters, have been found in mother's milk. So people don't think about what they're exposing their kids to by something they just put on their skin like a simple lotion. But it does get into mother's milk. The problem is they're endocrine disruptors. So they seem to be associated with altered estrogen, androgen, and progesterone activity. They can cause damage like reproductive and developmental toxicity and impaired functioning of the thyroid, liver, or kidneys. And since many of these UV filters were shown to cross a blood-brain barrier, the risk of neurotoxicity also occurs.
And if that wasn't enough to scare you, maybe this will. If you have elevated estrogen, you're more prone to storing fat. So maybe if you're not worried about, oh, hey, I'm going to have some neurotoxicity, my brain's not going to work very well, my thyroid's going to go out, my liver or kidney are going to fail, you might store fat. You're way more likely to store fat. So I think that'll trigger a lot more people.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, people are more worried about being fat than if their kidneys go out, right? I know.
That's something you can see. The other ones, you can't really tell.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, I want to focus on oxybenzone or BP3 since that's widely used and it actually covers both UVA and UVB light. And it seems to be absorbed more readily than the other organic filters. Like our body just soaks the shit up for some reason. And probably because it's highly lipophilic, meaning it's absorbed well in fat. So it's been found in the brain, liver, and adipose tissue in rats. And actually a side note from this paper I read is DEET, D-E-E-T, or the active ingredient in the Off mosquito spray, actually makes the skin more permeable to allow more BP3 to enter our blood supply. So what do you think people are doing when they're going out camping? They're out all day, they're wearing Off, and they're wearing sunscreen.
Oh, man. That scares me, too, because I don't know how many times I've done that exact combination.
Yep. So many people have.
I mean, I don't do this anymore, but, like, I'm into trail running. I see so many runners spraying on the DEET and rubbing sunscreen on right after. And it's like, damn, that's a horrible 1-2 combo right there.
Horrible 1-2 combo. Yeah, this little, that side note from the paper really stood out to me because I think it's so common for a lot of people.
And I know with DEET, you're not supposed to spray that on your skin, but everybody does. Like, you're supposed to apply that to your clothing, and I think that's probably the reason why.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not meant for your skin.
Everyone puts it on their skin.
Yeah, but no, you're not supposed to.
Oh, okay.
No, nobody reads labels. They just read, what does it do? It repels mosquitoes. Well, where do I want mosquitoes? I don't want them on my skin, so we put it there.
Yeah.
And no, you're supposed to put it on your clothing around it.
Oh, that's a great little tip. I didn't know that. Not that I use the shit anyways, but yeah. Jeez, okay. So there's been studies done in test tubes, so in vitro. Sorry for the banging, by the way. We have some dude doing construction literally like right outside my door. So it's kind of messing up the vibe for sure. Like, I'm trying to talk around this dude with this stupid-ass hammer. But it's messing up my flow for sure. But I don't know if this mic's going to pick it up or not. I'm sure it is, so I'm sorry about that. But they've done in vitro studies, which just means studies in test tubes with rat neuron cells, at concentrations of 1 microgram per mil, they showed decreased cell viability through increased caspase 3 activity. And that sounds kind of, I don't know, that sounds complicated. That probably doesn't mean shit to nobody, right?
No, that doesn't mean anything to me.
That doesn't mean anything, right? That really stood out to me, right? When I saw caspase, I was like, oh, because I read that book on mitochondria a while back, right? Or I guess I've read a few at this stage. But caspases are in control or of apoptosis, so programmed cell death. So that really stood out to me. So I was like, okay, let me look back at this paper, and have there been points where they've found more than 1 microgram in humans, right? So levels of 1 microgram and higher, actually up to 13 micrograms, have been found in human studies. So that number isn't unreasonable to find in humans. And caspases are the enzymes of cellular death. They control apoptosis, like I said. So increased caspase activity means mitochondria are being damaged. Oxidative stress is occurring. A free radical burst releases cytochrome C from its normal location inside the mitochondrial membrane. I'm about to get real technical, by the way. If you want to learn more about mitochondria, I recommend going back and listening to the CoQ10 podcast. It's super interesting, and I'm a big fan of mitochondria. That's probably the nerdiest shit you could say, but I really am. But a free radical burst releases cytochrome C from its normal location inside the mitochondrial membrane. And cytochrome C is responsible for shuttling electrons from complex 3 to complex 4 in the electron transport chain. And the ETC, the electron transport chain, that's our body's primary source of ATP. It's how our body makes energy. So remember from our CoQ10 episode that CoQ10 is responsible for shuttling electrons from complex 1 and 2 to complex 3 in the electron transport chain. That's actually the body's biggest source of endogenous free radicals. So the biggest source of free radicals we make ourselves comes from complex 1 and 2. That's why CoQ10 is such a strong antioxidant. So sunscreen is designed to stop reactive oxygen buildup from UV radiation. However, some of the compounds in sunscreen, like BP3, cause the same thing it's trying to prevent.
Yeah, that's
and the paper didn't say that. I just connected those dots.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. I mean, so any benefit that you possibly could be getting, you're also getting just as much damage from the product itself.
Yeah. And just think of the things you're preventing when you're wearing sunscreen, like the vitamin D synthesis. I mean, that's not hindered all the way, but all the extra shit. Like, you're getting good things from the sun, but you're also getting all this bad shit from the sunscreen. Like, it's a double whammy in the negative light, you know?
Yeah, you're not getting that serotonin production, that cortisol production, all the benefits.
Yeah, all the benefits, yeah. So those were organic filters, right? Those are the big ones. That's our body going to absorb. You also have inorganic filters, like I talked about earlier, zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. And they don't seem to penetrate the skin deep enough to cause an issue. So in vitro studies reported similar findings. So no particles were observed in deeper skin layers. Generally, the risk of zinc oxide nanoparticles exposure from dermal absorption is rather low. So I'm not really worried about the zinc or titanium type of sunscreens. But what I am worried about is just the toxic burden. And we had a whole podcast on this. So this stuff is allowed to be in products, like all these various chemicals, before any testing is done. Testing has to be done showing it's bad for you to be pulled from the shelves. No testing has to be done showing it's safe. We've talked about that.
Yeah, that's so stupid. That's such, like, backwards logic.
Yeah, let's just put it in and wait to see if these people get cancer, or wait to see if they develop some disease.
And it's really hard to prove that something is causing it. You need a lot of evidence. If it's like just one or two people do get sick from it, that's not enough. You need thousands of people. Like, look at glyphosate right now. Is you have so many people claiming that they're getting cancer from it, and it's still a safe. It still hasn't been pulled. Yeah. I don't know what it's going to take for that to get pulled.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's the type of thing we're talking
and
about.
And who makes money proving a particle or some component is unsafe?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah, it's just up to people that care about mankind and are like, hey, I don't want people to die and I don't want their health to get damaged.
Yeah, and usually those people are poor as shit. They don't have the money to do these sort of campaigns. But the problem with these inorganic filters is their size, because they're nanoparticles, meaning they're just small as shit. So nanoparticles have the ability to cross the blood-brain barrier. While this may be desirable for drug delivery systems, like getting meds past the brain barrier, that's a good thing for certain medications, it can also pose a risk of unwanted accumulation of potentially harmful chemicals. So that's really the problem with them, in my opinion. But I don't know, it's still kind of up in the air. But in the case of titanium dioxide, it's not yet clear how they are transported into or out of the brain, how they accumulate, or what kind of behavioral or cognitive dysfunction they may cause. Just like I said earlier, they can put this shit in there before they know what really happens. Which is ass backwards.
Oh, I know. And the reason that we have a blood-brain barrier is to prevent harmful stuff from going into our brain. So just because something can cross that blood-brain barrier doesn't mean that it's safe. That's not a good thing. Like, their barrier is there for a reason. We don't want stuff just being able to pass it.
Exactly. Our brain is super important, obviously.
And there's a lot of different, like, yeah, some of these minerals or these metals, yeah, they are important, but everything needs to be balanced out. And if you're just adding, like, zinc or this titanium to our body in an abnormal amount, in like a, you don't want those levels to be elevated. Your body's not going to know what to do with it. And it's going to cause some sort of ill effect. Maybe we don't know all the science around it yet, because sunscreen is really new. But most likely there's going to be some sort of negative.
Exactly. Like, you always talk about homeostasis. Our body's trying to find homeostasis. Well, if your new homeostasis is a shit ton of zinc on your skin, who knows what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, your body's either going to be dumping something else to deal with that, or absorbing or reabsorbing too much of something else.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't really know what's going to go on.
But something is, you know, it just is. Our whole body's connected. But yeah, this whole sunscreen argument does have an environmental side to it. So it's not just like a human health issue, but it's an environmental one as well. So these UV filters, eventually they reach the oceans, rivers, and the lakes. So organic UV filters accumulate in water, wastewater treatment plants, up to a milligram per liter concentration, which is a shit ton. Earlier, we've been talking about microgram and nanogram levels, which is like a tiny amount. Now we're talking about milligrams, of thousands of times more concentrations. And since conventional wastewater treatment plants are not able to remove them, they are consequently released into rivers, lakes, and oceans. With increased usage and lack of efficient removal, environmental contamination will probably increase in the future. Recent reports on coral bleaching show that environmental contamination with BP3 already poses a hazard to coral reefs. I don't know, you've never been to Hawaii, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I went to Hawaii recently and never going back. It is what it is, right? I love my life. I don't need to go on a fucking plane for 5 hours to be happy, okay? That's just how it is. But I know I'm weird with that, but they don't allow this product in their sunscreens out there. Like, they make a whole, like, big thing, like, coral reef safe sunscreen.
Good.
Because this shit is killing coral reefs. So, the level of BP3 detected in coral reefs in the U.S. Virgin Islands ranged from 75 to 1,400 micrograms. And in Hawaii, it ranged from 0.8 to 19 micrograms. And the lethal concentration, the LC50, so it's a lethal concentration required to kill 50% of a population, is 8 to 340. So we're well over that number in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and we're already up there in the lower range in Hawaii. That's 50% of the population dead. We're already at those levels.
Damn, that's scary. And if some place has determined that it's unsafe, why hasn't everybody caught up with them?
It's weird, right?
Like, unless we just think that they're wrong and that they're crazy. But I don't think so. I think they would know what's affecting coral reefs better than any other place because they have a lot there.
They do. Yeah, exactly. And coral reefs are, I mean, not that I know a lot about coral reefs, I don't, but I know they're integral to the, just the whole ecosystem. They play a big part.
If something's failing in the ecosystem, that means that there's something really wrong with the environment, and that's only going to affect everything else.
Yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah. So, like, we're so dependent on every single aspect of an ecosystem. Everything is. Like, they work in perfect harmony. So if one thing's affected, everything else is going to be affected. It's just a matter of time.
Yep. So this paper concluded that although some UV-related pathologies could be prevented by applying sunscreen, the efficiency and safety of these products is questionable. Potential neurotoxicity of such substances is presented, and the question of cost-to-benefit ratio is raised regarding large-scale use of sunscreen in its current composition. So it's saying, watch out. Okay, like the science isn't in. This isn't some blank check like sunscreen's great for you. Like this stuff in sunscreen can cause real damage.
So what is some of that real damage?
So everyone thinks, well, at least if you read on the label of most sunscreens, it'll say it prevents skin cancer. It'll say it protects you from skin cancer. Well, guess what? According to the National Cancer Institute, the rate of new melanoma cases among American adults has tripled since the 1970s, from 7.9% per 100,000 people in 1975 to 23% per 100,000 people in 2016.
So one thing that you just talked about earlier was that the problem with sunlight exposure in general that causes a sunburn is that the mitochondria are damaged. But then you just went through the oxybenzone.
Yeah.
That also caused your mitochondria to be damaged.
Yep.
So the mitochondria being damaged is what causes skin cancer, or is what causes cancer in general.
In general, yeah.
So that's why cancer is not being affected by it, because you're no matter what you're doing, the end result is the same, is damaged mitochondria. So that's why it's not doing anything. So melanoma mostly occurs in the like torso and limbs, places that do happen to get a lot of sunlight exposure.
And melanoma, that's the bad cancer.
Yeah, that's like the most deadly form of skin cancer.
That's what we need to be worried about.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, like, if you're going to die from skin cancer, that's what you're most likely to die from. So, yeah, you do, it's most likely to occur, like, in your torso, limbs, like, shoulders, like, those type of places. Places that do get, are likely to get sunburned. But that's not the only places that it's found. It's also found in places that get little to, like, no sunlight exposure. Places like your belly button. I don't know, I don't think I get very much sunlight in my belly button.
Me either.
Underneath your fingernails. Inside your mouth. Even on the bottom of your feet.
Yeah, places that never see the sun.
Yeah, so there has to be other causes for melanoma to explain this phenomenon besides sunlight.
Yeah, exactly. No, the use of sunscreen and the knowledge that UV radiation can damage our skin has increased since 1970 for sure. Go talk to your grandparents and see how much they use sunscreen. Guess what? They didn't. But if sunscreen did protect against melanoma, these two things wouldn't be going up at the same time. It just doesn't make sense.
At least it wouldn't be tripling.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's a really big number for it to be going up on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if it went up, you know, 5%, that's one thing. But it went up 300%.
That's a problem.
Yes, that's a really big deal.
Yeah. So we do have recommendations on how to choose, like, the right sunscreen if you really do want to use some.
So luckily, there's a great resource out there. This is a great resource for pretty much anything if you're worried about toxins. I mean, toxins in your food, toxins in your everyday products, like toothpaste, deodorant, body washes, like everything. They also have a very in-depth database on sunscreens. It's called the Environmental Working Group. So we're going to have a link to their website for sunscreens on there. So they give everything a score of 1 to 10 based on how toxic it is. So 1 is the best score, 10 is the worst. They even color coordinate it. So like scores of 1 and 2 are green, scores of like 3 through 6 are yellow, and then 7 through 10 are red. So green means go buy those. Red, bad, stay away from those. So there are many products listed, including many from very popular brands. So if you're in the store, any type of store that's going to be selling sunscreen, you should be able to check with an environmental working group to find it. And even on environmental working group, if you don't want to, if you want to know what sunscreen to buy before you even go to the store or buy it on like someplace like Amazon, they'll even give you like a dollar amount of like what it goes for like normally. So that is such a great resource. It tells you how toxic it is and how expensive it is too.
Yeah, EWG is such a great resource.
So some other protective measures would be just like protective clothing, like wearing long sleeves, maybe wearing hats if you're going to be out on the, like, you know, in the sun for a long period of time. You could also like bring an umbrella, sit under a tree, just other things that provide a lot of shade. Maybe not just stay out in the sun all day. And then also just know your limits. If you are one of those white ass people like Tyson,
yeah,
don't go out in the sun hiking for 5 hours a day without a shirt on. You know,
like, unless you're on this carnivore shit and you're healthy as hell like me.
just kind of know what you're going to do. Know your limits. I guess the time to really like invest in these sunscreens, like the safe sunscreens. If you're going to be on a boat all day, I guess, you know, there's very little shade there. You're going to be exposed to not only sunlight from the sun, but then to, like, the sunlight reflecting off the water. That's probably, you know, like a unique circumstance that you might want to be putting on sunscreen. And you're probably going to be out there for hours on end. So, like, that is one time that I would probably use multiple of these. I wouldn't stay shirtless all day. I'd go times with a shirt on, times with a shirt off. Probably wearing a hat for part of the day, too. You know, just kind of mix and matching.
And just be aware. You know, don't just go get drunk and spend 12 hours in the sun, because you're going to pay a price.
Yeah, definitely. So, in summary, sunlight has many benefits. Do not fear the sun. Oxybenzone is an endocrine disruptor, lowering testosterone, increasing estrogen. So the cons of it outweigh the pros. Diet changes, such as lowering your omega-6 fatty acids and increasing healthy saturated fats, will make you more resilient to UV radiation. Also, eating animal sources that have the right proteins in it, or the right amino acids, will help you create more glutathione, and that'll help you deal with all the reactive oxygen species.
And I'm a walking testimony to that. I literally went from a guy who sunburned at the drop of a dime to a guy who does not get sunburned anymore, period.
If he parked too far away from the store, he'd have to sprint because he'd get sunburned.
It was a problem.
So melanoma can occur in places that get little to no sunlight exposure. So it likely does have other causes if that is something that you are really worried about. And then also check out Environmental Working Group's website for safe sunscreens. And the safe sunscreens are the ones that have the inorganic filters, that zinc oxide and that titanium dioxide. Those are the safe ingredients. Avoid that BP3, that oxybenzone.
Yep. Boom, I think that's a pretty comprehensive sunscreen episode.
Yeah, we probably should have came out with this at the beginning of summer instead of the end of summer.
But I know.
Better late than never.
Yeah, this will stay on the internet forever nowadays. Yeah. I never thought we'd do something on sunscreen.
You know, neither did I. I was going to make it as a tip of the week, but when I brought that up to you, you had a bunch of information on it already, so it just seemed like, well, if we have this much info, we might as well make a whole entire podcast out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a little, side note on how I collect all this information, and I pride myself, I really do, in being a good researcher. Like, I can do deep dives on, like, the most obscure shit on the planet, but Tom mentioned he was going to do a tip of the week on sunscreen. And I just happened to go through my folder of, like, different papers I've saved over the years. I just kind of, like, searched sunscreen, and a few popped up, and I sent it to him. And he was like, well, shit, bro, there's so much information here. Let's just do an episode. And I was like, all right, cool. So
yeah, I mean, if I made a tip of the week on it, it would have been longer than the podcast episode itself. So I was like, yeah, let's just do that instead.
Yep. Do you have a tip of the week this week?
Oh, yeah, that's finally a nice transition.
There we go.
This is actually dealing with sunlight. This is going to be on sunglasses. So most people, are where they wear sunglasses, they're wearing them all day. And they think that it's helping them protect from the sun. Not really. So if you were to go to the bathroom in the middle of the day, you turn on that bathroom light, is it blinding you?
No.
No, not at all. There's no contrast. Your eyes are already adjusted to the light. But if you go to the bathroom at, like, let's say 3 in the morning when your eyes are adjusted to the dark, that bathroom light is brighter than the sun.
Painful.
Yeah, like, you can't see anything. So what's going on there? Is that bathroom light brighter in the middle of the night than it is during the day?
No,
it's the contrast. That's what's really going on there. So if you're wearing your sunglasses on all day, your eyes are going to be adjusted to it, thinking that it's darker. So when you do get exposed to that sun, you do look at the sun, it's the same amount of contrast as if your eyes were adjusted to it being brighter and then looking at the sun. So it's not really doing a whole lot of good. And then here's one thing that sounds pretty crazy, but there's actually a lot of science behind it. Is when you're wearing sunglasses, you are more likely to get sunburned.
Crazy.
It makes, like, first time I heard that, I was like, no, that can't be the case.
But this goes back to our body being connected.
Yeah. So, like, what is it with your eyes that's connected to your skin? Those are completely different organs. Like, what's going on there? So we have photoreceptors on our skin, but we also, where we have the majority of our photoreceptors are in our eyes. So what's going on there is our body thinks that it's a lot darker because it's looking through a dark filter. So because of that, our body's thinking it doesn't need to produce that much melanin. That's the protective factor against sunlight. That's what gives us that darker color, creates you to get tan, or if you live somewhere closer to the equator, get really, really dark. So that's what's going on there. You have less melanin to protect you from that sunlight. So you're going to be more likely to get sunburned because you're wearing sunglasses.
Crazy.
So, like, there are times where it is beneficial to wear sunglasses. You know, like, maybe if you're going to be, you know, you're out on a boat, so you're exposed to that sunlight from two different directions, from up and down, maybe you do want that extra protection. Or if you're driving at, like, dawn or dusk where that sun's, like, literally, like, right in your eyes, then that's probably a good time to have that sunlight protection. But if it's, like, noon and the sun's right above you, unless you're walking around looking straight up all day, those sunglasses really aren't doing you a lot of good. They're actually causing you a lot of harm.
So, yeah, again, so just be aware, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, sunglasses, again, are like a new invention. And, like, yeah, so just gotta be smart and be aware of it. And, hey, like we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, sunlight has so many benefits, so reap all those benefits.
Yep. Oh, man, that's great. I really love that. And I might fall for that. I wear sunscreen. I mean, not sunscreen. I wear shades all day, every day. So I should probably take that advice myself.
Well, you know what really kills me is, like, I see people wearing sunglasses when it's just, it's like sunlight out, but it's like overcast. I'm like, the sun's not in your eyes. Why do you need these sunglasses?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if you're hungover and you're just trying to hide yourself, maybe I get it. But I mean, come on now.
I know, you don't need it.
I'm all about function. I don't really care about, like, fashion that much. Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe, to each his own, I guess.
Yeah, no, I get it. And you know what's funny? I just made a quick note right now. We should really change the title of this podcast to, like, the fight against common knowledge. I feel like everything we do goes against the grain. Who is talking about the bad side of sunscreen?
Oh, no, nobody.
Who's talking about the benefits of eggs?
Oh, nobody.
You know what I mean? It's just so funny to me.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Maybe we should do that change.
All right, change it. But yeah, I mean, that's another topic for another day. But yeah, thank you for listening. There's another podcast in the books. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and review our podcast. You can find us on YouTube, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and of course, Google Play and Apple Podcasts. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.